40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Steel.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. President Biden has declared a state of emergency in California as the state confronts the latest storm system. CBS's Steve Futterman is there.
In many parts of Northern California, they are stacking sandbags. Last week, the concern was snow. This week, it's rain and floods. The rain is already coming down, and it's melting snow. That combination is what worries officials.
Flooding is imminent. Please evacuate your residents now.
Residents who are staying are trying their best to get ready.
We have our solar-powered lamps ready.
In some areas, the rains are forecast to continue into next week. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
President Biden is responding to the latest jobs report, which showed more than 300,000 positions were added last month. Here's CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The president calls it a good jobs report, but investors worry it will lead the Federal Reserve to increase interest rates at a faster clip. The next report on consumer prices is due next Tuesday. Mr. Biden says he hopes it will show inflation to be in solid shape.
I feel confident that we're headed in the right direction.
Asked about budget proposals House Republicans are beginning to offer, Mr. Biden said one GOP plan would result in drastic federal cuts to police, firefighters, and health care.
I don't know. We just have a very different value set.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Sexual assaults are up at military academies nationwide. CBS's Cammy McCormick has that story.
One in five females say they experienced unwanted sexual contact. This report shows an 18% jump in assaults over the previous year. The Navy in particular showed nearly double the number. The student survey found increases in everything from touching to rape at all of the schools.
Suspected drug cartel members in Mexico have handed over five people reportedly involved in the deadly kidnapping last Friday of four Americans. Two Americans and a Mexican woman were killed when gunmen opened fire on the four U.S. citizens in the city of Matamoros. The Americans had come to Mexico for a medical procedure. We're learning more details about yesterday's mass shooting at a Jehovah's Witness meeting hall in Hamburg, Germany. CBS's Holly Williams catches us up.
German officials say the gunman had a sport shooting license to carry the pistol he used. Police also say they'd previously received an anonymous letter warning them that the shooter may have undiagnosed mental health issues.
Eight people were killed in that attack, including the shooter who killed himself.
Hello. Sorry.
Are you visitors? Prince Edward greeting crowds of people in Edinburgh today. He was named the new Duke of Edinburgh. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's unemployment rate was 2.9% in January. Workforce development officials say Wisconsin businesses created 4,800 private sector jobs in the first month of the year. The national jobless rate was 3.4%. Foxconn and We Energies want to build a solar panel farm in Mount Pleasant, Civic Media's Melissa Kay reports.
The project would generate enough energy to power about 300 homes. Foxconn is touting the project as one of the largest non-residential solar projects in Racine County. Kelly Gallagher, running for Mount Pleasant Village President, says this doesn't fulfill any of the promises that Foxconn made to the community. I'm Melissa Kay.
In sports, Marquette plays UConn in the Big East Tournament semifinals tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoyed by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
Warning, listening to the devil's advocates may expose you to opposing views.
It's scary. Maybe I'm coming a little bit more over the left, but...
Well, it's not left. It's good governance, Steve.
It's good to be exposed to different ideas, and I do appreciate that you do put that out there on the airways, because a lot of times where you just get a little sound bite of this or a little bit of that, and that's the end of it. You're to be commended for that.
Dave, I'm glad you finally come around to commending the greatest radio show ever, man.
Follow the devil's advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUK.
And never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class. Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Job numbers. Marty Walsh, before he leaves as Secretary of Labor, came out with the job numbers today. An additional 311,000 jobs created in the month of February. That is 12.4 million jobs created since President Biden became, president. And you go, oh, well, you know that. No, those are jobs that have been created. People are back to work. People are off unemployment. When he took office, unemployment was 6.3%, now down to 3.6, lowest level in my lifetime. I know, but Rick, there aren't as many people in the workforce anymore. You're right. A lot of people are retiring. People my age and older are going, the heck with this. Not dealing with the poverty wages and the nonsense. Finding our own way. And that's a good thing for younger workers, especially because it gives them better bargaining power to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. There's a lot of good going on and going to make employers make choices. Good idea. Now, that's in the last 3-4 months, over 350,000 jobs per month in these months, which are historically the lower months. Now, the right wing losing their minds. This is just, it's the calm before the storm. They say this every month, that the recession's coming. We're working really hard to get that recession here with the help of the Fed, with the help of a Republican House. And, well... the moneyed interest who seem to want another recession. They seem to be dying for a recession, you know, to get working people desperate again. Got to get them desperate so they'll take those crummy jobs again. Now, yesterday we talked about the president unfurling his $6.9 trillion budget, a budget that the White House claims is going to, over the next decade, going to save us nearly $3 trillion. You know, help us reduce that debt a little bit. Republicans haven't released their budget yet, but you see the early statements coming out from the House Freedom Caucus. It's like they're loading the gun, and they're passing it around to make sure that it's loaded, so that they can get ready to shoot the hostage. Because this debt ceiling thing is, it's coming quickly, and you have all of the arrows pointing towards these handful of Republicans, these House Freedom Caucus people, and it's more. Look, there are more Republicans who want to hold this off and create this hostage situation so that they can get their pound of flesh. But I think it's just this core number in this caucus that really they really want to shoot the hostage. They really, really want pain and suffering. I go back to the collapse in 2008. And Republicans at the time were losing their mind because of the TARP funding that that came out. And Obama, you know, had some stimulus money that helped working people not lose absolutely everything. There were still millions of people who lost their homes, but there was some help. And I still remember my senator, Pat Toomey, saying that he would have preferred a much harder down. Because then, you know, like the phoenix, we would have risen out of the fire. And you go, wow, that's great mythology. But how many millions of people would have suffered, struggled? How many children would have gone to bed hungry? How many lives would have been ruined? They don't care about that. They're in the macro sense of, you know, we got to care about the economy on this macro level. But when you get down to the baseline, you and me, us, we're disposable to these people. So when Rick Scott, one of the richest guys in the Senate, says, you know, we want to sunset every piece of legislation, you know, that pesky Social Security, that pesky Medicare, that pesky Medicaid, knowing that it's never going to come back once they sunset it, you kind of have to go, which side are they on? Now, this alternative world, because we live in this bipolar world, the jobs number came out. 311,000 created in February, 351,000 for the last 3 months, 12.4 million jobs since, you know, Biden has taken office, went from having 18 million people on unemployment to less than 2 million people now. We're moving in a good direction. Rick Scott tweets out that here's what the mainstream media won't tell you about today's February jobs data. Higher unemployment rates. I'm going, no, that's not the higher unemployment rate. More layoffs on the way. I'm going, on the way? Yeah, I can say that, yeah, in my lifetime, there will be layoffs. And there will be more jobs. I can say in my lifetime, it's going to snow and it's going to rain and there will be unicorns dancing on rainbows. I can say lots of things. But this is, I've got to take one of the richest senators in the Senate, his word, there will be more layoffs. I guarantee it. And if we keep letting him decide, absolutely there will be more layoffs. He says fewer people with full-time or part-time jobs. Yeah, again, we're getting older. The baby boomers are getting older. They're retiring at an alarmingly fast clip. And my generation, Gen X, we can't pick up the slack because we're not big enough. And the younger generation has been, well, screwed out of these jobs. And they're like, you know what? We're going to do our own thing. We're going to start our own businesses. But I do find it interesting that the Freedom Caucus, along with Senator Scott, have it in their head that we need to strangle government. You know, my congressman, Scott, pardon me, Perry, who is the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, hell bent on sending the country into recession. He's quoted saying, first, we need to shrink Washington. And we're going to do that by saving now, by ending, first of all, the president's $400 billion student loan bailout and rescinding all unobligated, unspent COVID funding. So we're going to go back and claw back all this stuff. We're going to screw those kids over. And they're going to go after the IRS money. They're going to go back and they're going to undo all of the stuff that would bring revenue in. They're going to do everything they can do to stop spending on anything having to do with climate change so that, you know what, disaster capitalism will prevail down the road. Because here's what I can guarantee you. In my lifetime, there will be disasters caused by our climate. And the capitalists will make lots of money off of it. It could happen tomorrow, could happen in a week, could happen in a month. It's going to happen. And people like Perry understand this. Got to wonder who's funding his campaign. But this is one of these moments. And this is where I just get into one of these kind of, which side are you on kind of moments. Because I had an interesting conversation with someone today who said, you know, I love your show because it's not political on its face. You talk about issues that are important to working people, but politics has to come into it because everything's political, especially today. You know, things that we used to think of as common sense now are political footballs. You know, like children eating. I don't know how that became a political football, But in my lifetime, it did. And I think it started with Reagan, who destroyed the school lunch programs that came out during the LBJ years. You know, Mr. Ketchup is a vegetable. That started it. And now we've just exploded this to now people are dug into their camps. And we can't get things done for working people. And then they just throw us garbage. And we fight over the garbage. Stop and think about what Republicans are moving us towards. This debt ceiling thing, this is real. This is serious. I know, people love to say, no, we can default. You know, we're the world's reserve currency. Yeah, if we default, the rest of the world comes with us. This is what the experts are telling me. We will start a global recession. It's even worse than the inflation that we're seeing now. And look, that's good for Republicans. They love that right now because they're not the guy in the White House. They can point at the guy in the White House. It's all his fault. You know, we did all of this stuff. We gridlocked. We delayed. We made all of this noise, this racket. You know, we it's his fault. We broke all the dishes and you wonder why nobody gets to eat dinner. This is where we are. And what's really kind of frustrating is that you can't get past that noise. Because I think everybody wants things to get done. Take a look at the student loan thing. It's one of the first things on Scott Perry's mind. We're going to screw, because understand, we've coming out of this pandemic, for a couple of years, you've got these students who have been saddled with a lifetime of student loan debt, hundreds of thousands of dollars in some case, who haven't had to pay those loans, now going to have to restart payments. And they now see what life's like by having a couple extra dollars in their pockets. They've now made decisions maybe to buy a home that they're not going to be able to afford once those loan payments come back. What's that going to do to the overall economy, especially at a time when you're still raising interest rates and you're moving policy to strangle government? Because understand, government spending, kind of important to the economy. Government investment, kind of important to the economy. Government demand, really important to the economy. It's jobs. It's millions of jobs. And what I'm struggling to get is how people don't see the interconnectedness. How, you know, it's like this debate over the rural versus the urban, and we're going to have a national divorce. Each need each other. There's a relationship there. I know we love to have dividing lines and this is my line and you stay on that side, I'll stay on mine. But each side does need each other. Some a little more than others. But that's how an entire country, a unified country should be. The fact that we're this split up, that someone's actually seriously in our government talking about a national divorce, basically an economic civil war, should make everybody angry. Instead, I get people all the time, yeah, we should do that so we can be around people who are just as dumb as we are. Crazy, crazy times. Something good, though. Let me finish up this segment on a good note. The House unanimously voted to declassify information around the origins of COVID-19. They sent the bill to the president. I am assuming he is going to sign it. And maybe we will get to the bottom. Now, understand, Republicans want to be this, you know, Dr. Fauci, you know, surreptitiously funded this Wuhan lab. It's not how that happened. And Democrats are going to want to figure out a way to blame it on something else. No, it was, you know, it was some. I still think what I thought from the beginning. There's the Wuhan coronavirus lab where the coronavirus was, because you're in a place where it's heavy, where it's there. From what I'm told, lots of activity with bats and all kinds of stuff that this stuff feeds in. Somehow it got loose into the wet markets. I'm going to say my guess had always been it's by accident. But we'll see. I don't believe it was on purpose. But there's a conspiracy theory out there. And I've had people say, no, Rick, China's trying to kill off an entire generation of old people because they're old heavy. They don't have enough people to take care of all those old people. And I go, you know, if that were true, you know, again, this is one of those pushing back on common sense, with a little common sense. If that were true, would they have locked down the way they did? I mean, because they locked down much more in a much more draconian way than we did. You looked at their streets, it was ghost towns, and they were arresting people. So I'm going to struggle with that one. But I think we do need to have, just like January 6th, we do need to have a public forum. And oh yeah, we did, except the Republicans chose to abstain, basically saying, yeah, that's right. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm going to take a quick break, right back. Stick around. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at RickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, red state, blue state. Again, people calling for the national divorce. And you know, what would a national divorce look like? If you could, conceivably, if you could do it, if you could really pull it off and you'd have, you know, red states and blue, truly red states and blue states. Think about it. I mean, I look at Iowa. I look at Arkansas, I look at Tennessee, I look at Mississippi. You go through a number of these states that are going after child labor laws because we're going to make child labor great again, going to put those kids back in the slaughterhouses, or we're going to put them back on the roofs of buildings so that they can do some roofing because, you know, they're light. If they fall, it won't be as hard when they hit the ground. And look, they heal much better than older people do. I'm being facetious. This is a joke, but not on the right. We're going to teach them some skills, get them to work. And you see the legislation that's being passed in these places. A tax on education, a tax on health care. You know, basically the wild, wild west where the wealthy, well, get wealthier. And the working people, well, you're at someone's beck and call. Pushing more draconian anti-worker kind of laws. If you think right-to-work laws are bad, that lower wages and make health care and retirement security further off the table and make workplaces more unsafe, then right-to-work laws are for you. Because the studies are in and they are conclusive. Where they pass this right-to-work law that comes with no rights and no work, you end up with lower wages, less healthcare access, less retirement security, and much, much more dangerous workplaces. Now, again, this is what the right wants. And we've seen this play out in the legislation that they've moved. And that's just in the workplace. That's not talking about all the LGBTQ plus trans stuff or the drag shows. That's not talking about any of that other stuff. That's not talking about the homogenization of ideology or religion. And as I've said before, you know, once we decide we're a Christian country, the fun will be how crazy the crazies will go. How extreme will they take this ideology? You know, because I said from the beginning, you know, before they got one of their wet dream list checked off to overturn Roe. I said, eventually, you know, Roe's not the end. Roe is the beginning. Then will come, you know, Griswold and contraception. And then we'll, you know, become, you know, we're going to go after people who have premarital relations. And then, you know, at-will divorces, that's going to go. We're going to go back 100 years because that's what the puritanical right wants. They want power and control over half the population, you know, the female half. And then you look at a blue state, and I look at Michigan. Michigan, good on you, man. Every blue state in the country should be paying attention to what they're doing. Not only did Michigan kill their right to work bill, they're moving that lame duck piece of garbage that Republicans rammed through back in 2012 in a lame duck like thieves in the night so that those people term limited out could get jobs on the other side. They moved to restore prevailing wage laws that will help build local building trades and keep jobs local. That is fantastic. It's what we need to be doing, and also help local economies by having good wages reverberate through an economy. They also passed background checks, universal background checks for all gun purchases. The right's losing their mind. Also, the 1931 abortion ban, they repealed it, sent it to the governor's desk. This is what you do, Democrats. This is how you move. Not only this, the day after they repealed the no rights at work nonsense, they went back in and they are going to introduce a piece of legislation to provide refundable tax credits for people paying union dues, like it used to be before Republicans put that on their target list. Like it used to be before Donald Trump put it on his target list. And this is where I talk to my union brothers and sisters all the time and go, you know, one of the big slaps in the face, again, Republicans slapped you in the face by taking that one little deduction. It's not much. It's the point of it. It's the same kind of thing that I think about when I think of Ronald Reagan. One of the things Reagan fought for was the tax unemployment benefits. You know, before Reagan was president, they didn't tax unemployment benefits because they understood it was an insurance program. It was an anti-poverty insurance program. It was to help you to get from one spot to another. Hit a little rough patch, lose your job. Here's a little bit of income to put food on the table. Maybe help keep up a little bit with the bills until you get your next job. But Republicans have done their foolhardy best. Arkansas, another state, attacking unemployment benefits. They've done their foolhardy best to tear apart the social safety net. So for me, in looking at the difference between red state, blue state, red state, we're talking desperation. We're talking, you've got freedom. You got freedom to go. You got freedom to work. You got the right to work. Now, again, no rights, no work. But you got that right. I'm not quite sure what right you got, but you've got it. But you're going to work for lower wages in worse conditions without health and retirement security and no voice. And you're disposable. But I guess the positive is you get to hate who you want. And that's the interesting part. You get to hate whoever you want. You want to hate the gays? You hate the gays. You want to hate those black folk over there? Like the Dilbert guy? You can do it. You can do it! It's twisted. It's bizarre. But this is the world that they're trying to create for us. And the thing is, and I guess the good thing, is the majority of people that I know, even the ones who did vote for Trump, don't want to live in that world. This is the thing that's interesting to me. I mean, Michigan was a red state for a while. They tried the bad policies. And what I love about Michigan is they went, that didn't work. That was bad for us. We need to go back to what we were doing before. It's really, really remarkable. So Democrats, pay attention to that. But everyone else, stop and think about what kind of a place do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a place where you have to abide by the majority opinion? Where you've got to look a certain way and act a certain way and do a certain thing. And anybody thinks she finds out you're different, ostracized. It's kind of where we're heading. I look at the intolerance on the extreme right. It's troubling. Now, there's intolerance on the left, too. Don't get me wrong. But not nearly.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Millions of Californians are under flood threats as heavy rain falls on top of massive amounts of snow in the mountains. The Weather Channel's Mike Bettis.
Another 6 feet of snow is possible into the mountains, but in some locations, much as another foot of rain is also possible. We think flooding will continue right into the weekend and beyond.
Silicon Valley Bank fails and financial regulators close it, taking control of its deposits. Independent banking consultant Bert Ely.
A lot of the relationships that borrowers had with the bank are going to be disrupted. And their borrowers have to go out and find another bank to borrow money from.
Florida's Republican governor is widely expected to run for president in 2024. Today, Governor Ron DeSantis visited the key presidential nominating state of Iowa. CBS's Aaron Navarro in Davenport.
CBS News has learned that in private conversations with donors and allies, DeSantis has indicated he is leaning towards a potential run and will make a final decision after the legislative session in Florida is over.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. More than 100,000 homes and businesses. That's how many lost power in the latest snowstorm to Wallop, Wisconsin. The southeast got the worst of it. There are several reports of tree limbs and power lines giving out under heavy snow. It's a snow day for several schools around Wisconsin. Others started late or went remote. A state appeals court rules the Wisconsin Assembly broke the open records law when it first denied a media request for documents relating to a former state lawmaker accused of sexual harassment. That happened in 2019. The court's ruling says the Assembly owes the Journal Sentinel, the State Journal, and other news organizations their lawyers' fees. In sports, Marquette plays UConn in the Big East Tournament semifinals tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Whole new game with the Civic Media Network and our local stations carrying coverage of Marquette men's basketball in the Big East Conference Tournament. The number one seeded Golden Eagles continue to march through with a quarterfinal win, moving on to a semifinal game this Friday at 5:30 p.m. Catch all the action on WXCO 1230 a.m., 98.9 FM in Wausau. Marquette basketball in the Big East Tournament on this local Civic Media radio station or wherever you're a fan. Find WXCO on the Civic Media app.
This is Rocker, and I bet you didn't know I was a realtor. Come down to my open house tailgate party, 8 to 10, Saturday and Sunday mornings in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point. Enjoy donuts from Zippy Lube and coffee from Ford Craft and Coffee, and let's talk strategy before you head into battle. Find your glory, create a battle plan. Enjoy coffee and donuts every Saturday and Sunday morning in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find us on Facebook or weikert-lakepoint.com.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
The issue with Milwaukee schools, just not enough high-quality schools.
Weekdays 11 to 2.
You can talk about everything else. You can talk about the funding. You can talk about school choice and for it or against it. But there's not enough Hope Christian schools. There's not enough St. Marcus schools. There's not enough Kings. There's not enough Reagans.
And until we fix that,
Milwaukee public schools really isn't going to change.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Body Focus on properly clothing its women members.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, not surprising, you know, if you watched the trial of Larry Householder, the former Ohio Speaker of the House, and former Ohio State GOP Chairman Matt Borges, convicted Thursday on federal court of participating in a pay-to-play scheme. A little bribery, a little greasing the palm. And you know, look, you expect a little bit of that, but $61 million actually, for this scheme to bail out this energy company, $61 million. Each of them could face up to 20 years in jail. They're obviously going to appeal because I loved the defense. That $61 million in bribes, it's because of Citizen United. It's political speech. I love that argument. And here to share some thoughts on how corrupt Ohio has become, one of the most corrupt states in the country, and householder right there at the top of the list. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us. I think I lost Bob.
There we go. Thank you.
I think Bob fell asleep. How we doing, buddy? I think we lost
him. I'm sorry, what's that?
I think we lost him again.
Are you there?
Yeah, here we go. You there?
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So, brought to you by Verizon. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
So, householder, your state, corrupt, thoughts?
Well, there's some interesting issues also to this that have not really been brought up to the surface much, even by the media. Of course, householder's been convicted. Matt Borges, former chairman of the Republican Party, convicted. Two people pled on the issue, and one of the lobbyists committed suicide. I think it was last year.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about this is, in beyond the aspect of the dark money, which I'll talk about in a second here, no one from the corporation, no one was charged.
And why not?
Well, they did some type of deal where they avoided criminal charges if they, you know, blah, 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 offered testimony. But then you have householder's main guy that ran his system, Longstreth, who, you know, also testified against householder and, you know, turned state's evidence. But he'll get some type of charge. But the corporation itself that funneled through $61 million, not one person that I know of, there was a regulator that got charged. The corporation didn't get charged. I mean, how does that happen? It's beyond me. Now, the issue of the money, what householder did, and he was thrown out of the legislature. He was expelled because he wouldn't quit. And so what he did, though, is he took the money, and then he used it to get people elected who then voted for him for speaker. Now, and this won't sound very good, what I'm about to say, Rick, that in itself would not technically, probably, be something you could get convicted of. You know, you take money and you use it, and you get people elected, and they like you, and then they elect you speaker.
Sure. Yeah, nobody knows where that. As long as the people who you got elected didn't know where the money was coming from, and there was a quid pro quo of we're taking First Energy's money to get you elected, correct, and you're going to do this for First Energy, there's no crime there, I don't think.
Correct. Now, later, of course, they did a bill which, you know, greased First Energy's system there and let them out of a lot of regulations and problems and the nuke plant they had and everything like that. But householder also used the money for a condominium in Florida and paying off a credit card and things like that. So when that kicked in, obviously, that added more fuel to the fire of this being, you know, a bribe and also of money used illicitly. And First Energy would have known, you know, where that money went. It's dark money. And there's these organizations, they've been around a while. And of course, Citizen United's a decision with the Supreme Court, but there's these dark money groups of 501c3s, 501c4s, you know, and so they're around the country. And when we had talked about campaign finance reform, you know, John McCain focused on soft money, which, you know, could come from the businesses of the unions at the time. But nobody, even back then when we raised the issue, wanted to talk about the dark money. This is money you don't have to tell where it's coming from. Now, the mechanisms to feed Householder and his, you know, his people, and they got, you know, big, the one lobbyist made, I think, $2 million, but that mechanism was hidden. But the actual dark money itself was going through systems that you didn't have to tell.
But, you know, the thing is, and maybe you can help me here, isn't that basically how the right wing built their, you know, their state policy network? I mean, isn't this the think tank model? And, you know, all of those have offshoots to do all of these other things, you know, Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all these kind of spun out of those, then go out and do this hit political work?
Well, they did. I mean, they mastered it. And on the other side, you know, there's people that have, you know, groups.
George, there's some Soros on the left, and, too, sure.
Oh, yeah. George Soros, you know, did these, the 501. I think he had a 501c3. And then Rove saw the, Karl Rove, Bush's guy, saw, wow, these PACs, you know, and they create these groups. And then, yes, Freedom Works and, you know, all of these groups. And probably what happened, I think, is the right perfected the process.
Oh, absolutely, they did.
Yeah, they did. And you throw in Citizens United. And, you know, I just think it all ought to be, to just be transparent. And then, you know, I mean, I got in trouble with the lobbyists, but to be frank about it, you know, we, you know, listed, for example, the trip, you know, that I took, we listed, it was under funded in the listing. I understand that. But, you know, as far as all the, you know, the dark money, there was no dark money particularly involved in that. In those cases, Abramoff threw the money all around and, you know, it was listed. So just think, if Abramoff did things that were, you know, illicit and illegal, just think about the dark money side of it, of what you don't know about.
Yeah. No, this is the bigger part of this. Yeah, somebody got caught with their hand in the till. Because as I was looking at this, I'm going, you know, okay, so First Energy is attempting to lobby the Ohio legislature to bail them out. A bunch of corporations do this. This is what. There's a whole cottage industry of K Street is full with this stuff. You know, why was this different? You know, I guess it keeps coming back to that for me. Why was this bribery different? Because, you know, you look at lobbying as a whole, it seems like, well, it seems like a lot of bribery.
Well, again, I pointed out in the beginning of our conversation, and again, I know it sounds good, not good. I know it sounds dirty. I know this. But if, in fact, Householder had not, and well, they caught him on some other things, trying to offer bribes for inside information, but if Householder had not utilized money for himself, then the really bigger picture nasty side of this, and I say that because, look, Householder funneled some money, fix up a condo in Florida and stuff, and let me call that trite, and I'll tell you why. That is trite. It's illegal, but it's trite compared to what happened to the taxpayers of Ohio bailing out this huge corporation and a law to come in to let them out of everything in the regulatory process, all right? And that's even worse, but that in itself probably would not have gotten to a jury trial if it weren't for the personal money they used. It's just as bad what they did with the money for First Energy and using it to pass a bill, but I hate to say it, probably wouldn't on its own have led justice to be able to convict them.
Yeah. So, I mean, but if you stop and look at it purely as a return on investment, $60 million sounds like a lot of money. But when you look at the fact that they were seeking a $1.3 billion state bailout for their two failing nuclear plants, you know, $60 million is a drop in the bucket.
Right. And that's the way the corporation looked at it. And they just kept funneling the money and throwing the money out there. And then they created these accounts that received the money. And none of them. Look, this is probably why the corporation, nobody was convicted. They don't have to report those things.
Right.
Because if they had to actually report it and it was ironclad, they would all be in prison. They don't. They didn't. They gave the money, and it was up to somebody else to say where it was going.
So Householder falls on the sword here. They say they're going to appeal. They're arguing on a first Citizens United, basis. Who knows where this goes? Does this garner any national attention? Is this something that nationally should be front and center? Is this just Ohio is just a criminal state? They're all corrupt there. It is what it is for Ohio, but the rest of the country will be fine. Is this something that nationally we should be looking at?
Well, it should be, but I don't think it will. There's going to have to be some big national deal come down sometime that affects, I guess, more states before people react. For example, the heat came up about members of Congress and their stocks. That affected a bunch of people,
right.
A lot of people in the Congress. They wanted to then do something about it. This is like Ohio, and now that there's been a conviction and he was thrown out as speaker, you know how that runs. Okay, it's all over with. It's done. They got the bad guy. They put him in jail, and it's done. If you look at the big picture of this, though, this one is a textbook case example of, $61 million that was used to elect people, to elect one individual as a speaker to then shepherd through legislation for that very same corporation. And, if the pharmaceutical industry, for example, is giving probably even more money and they're doing it to keep certain people in power at a higher level of whoever, whatever party, then that's just the same type of case example as what happened in Ohio.
Yeah. Now, I look at this, and again, I look at the bailout. I look at a company getting bailed out, the deregulation, all the stuff that went along with this. This is generally in Republicans' wheelhouse to begin with. Why did they have to bribe these guys to get what they were going to get anyway? So, it was part of the trial. Were these bribes solicited? Was this, just the normal course of lobbying, or don't we know?
No, I think we know. Anybody that knows, Householder, I've known him forever. Anybody that knows Householder knows that he's, he has a strong arm. He and I got into it years back. He wanted a certain amount of contributions. I wouldn't do it. And if you look at the district, they decimated the eastern Democratic portion of my district, decimated it, took it all away from me. And the only reason I had a thumbnail of my home in the district was because the Senate put it back in. He even took my home out when he got mad at me. So he has a history of, and I'm not wishing anybody, bad harm or whatever comes to them. But I'm just saying, anybody that knows him knows he had a history. And I think the corporation knew unless he was in charge, unless he became the speaker, they weren't going to get what they wanted.
Yeah.
So therefore, they had to go along with it, because in order for him to get to be speaker, he needed to spend the money out there. And this was the quick way to spend it. Look, normally people in public office that want to be speaker of Ohio legislature or any state legislature or national, they raise money, they go in and raise money for candidates, they give money to candidates. That happens all the time. And this was the, quote, easy way out. You didn't have to do a bunch of fundraisers. You just make one phone call to First Energy, give me $61 million, spread the $61 million around, elect who you want, they elect a speaker, First Energy gets what it wants. I mean, this is a connect your dots.
The thing I found interesting is Borges, the former state chair of the Republican Party. He could have came to an agreement, a deal, got 6 months and testified. Now he's facing 20 years, but he says he doesn't regret his decision. I don't know. I think I'd be regretting that decision.
Well, having been through this, where I was looking at a trial and would need to raise $3.2 million, number one, to go to trial. Number two, looking at the fact that when you go to trial, you don't end up with one or two indictments. You end up with 50, 60, 70 indictments, And if you lose on one, ask Rod Blagojevich of Illinois, you can beat the government 62 times. You lose the 63rd time. Guess what? You're looking at 10 years. And I think Borges didn't take the stand, Householder did. But I think with Matt Borges, he thought that he wasn't going to be so wrapped up in this. He was the side thing, this. But the problem he had is he offered a check to get inside information to a Republican who then turned state's evidence and said, yes, he did that. So, you know, he was associated just enough with Householder to have this have the tag-along effect, I guess you would call it. To be frank about it, Borges wasn't the main mastermind, you know, of these things, but he was a player with Householder to get what Householder wanted done.
Yeah, as my mother always said, you're judged by the company you keep.
Yeah.
So if that's the company you're keeping, well, oops.
That's right.
Do we think he gets 20 years? I mean, do you think he sees 20 years?
You know, it's hard to say, but I would, you know, I did a plea deal for 18 months. The judge gave me 30 months. They didn't do a plea deal. When you go into court and you lose, you're in worse shape. I mean, my gut, and who knows what will happen, my gut tells me 10 years. I mean, that's what my gut tells me.
And some restitution, maybe? Some of that, claw back some of the ill-gotten gains?
Yes, that's the other thing. In my case, because I didn't, take anything or steal anything, I didn't have restitution. I had a fine, you know, for the activity. But in their case, I mean, there could be restitution because, you know, of the money that was used for personal use. There could be restitution, yes.
Well, let's hope he's left penniless and insane. Because, look, this kind of violation of the public trust, at some point, there's got to be someone who's the poster child of don't do it. I mean, if this is ever going to change and we're ever going to have faith in the leaders that we elect to actually represent us and not these big moneyed interests, I don't know how you get away from that. I don't know how you turn this tide, because clearly we can't legislate it.
Well, and this one, Rick, as you know, affected 11 million people. I mean, it affected the entire state. So if there's ever a casebook example, they call this the largest, you know, scandal in Ohio's history. But beyond even that, I mean, it's a case of a special interest involved with a lawmaker and lawmakers that ended up affecting, you know, the entire citizenry of the state.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something that could be done, like this could be done nationally, you know, with pharmaceuticals or the electric grids or, you know, whatever. There could be something like this that could happen.
No, and I think most people think, Bob, that this happens every day, that this mm-hmm. kind of stuff is what our elected leaders are doing every day, that this guy just got caught. He just maybe got his arm a little too far into the cookie jar. But I know mm-hmm. people who think the entire system's corrupt, wrought with corporate cash, you know, where we should have legislators wearing, you know, NASCAR jackets.
Uh-huh. Well, the thing about this is, and I don't know about, you know, the broad-based side of the country, but I do know from being in D.C., there's extremely powerful interests. And as long as there's dark money, as long as it's out there, as long as you don't know who's giving and where it's going, yes, this could be happening every single day all over the country. The way, and let's say Ohio cleans it up and says, yep, everything, yeah, you put a dime in, you show it. But it really needs to be done nationally. And as we argued with John McCain and Feingold about their campaign finance bill, at the time, we brought up the issue of transparency. You put a dime in, you know who puts it in, and you know where it goes.
So last question I've got for you. You know, you helped write the Help America Vote Act. You're kind of in, this is kind of your wheelhouse. How do we make this more transparent? You know, how do we make it that this kind of stuff doesn't happen, especially not at this scale?
It's an easy law to write. And like I said, at the time, you know, McCain was angry with me because he wanted to do away with soft money. And within the Democrat and Republican side, a lot of people really didn't want to at that time. But we did start to embark on discussion of issues about, you know, transparency. And I think that this could be, you know, I think this could be solved by simply saying, you know, federally, that any PAC, any 501c3, any organization that, in fact, you know, it expends any amount of money for any purpose, you know, within the political system and the PACs, et cetera, has to account for who gives and where it goes. You can't stop it by saying you can't give, because right. then that'll go to the court. But you can surely show where it goes. And let me tell you something. When this whole thing started, if people would have known, oh, I just saw $10 million went from First Energy to Householders PAC, this may have been stopped.
Yeah, that would have raised eyebrows. No, that's
it would have.
Something we should be moving forward, pushing for. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, excellent information.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Ney. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that farm labor activist Cesar Chavez broke a 25-day fast. He fasted as a sign of commitment to nonviolence during the struggle for farm workers in Delano, California, to gain fair wages and safe working conditions. During the fast, he only drank water. He broke the fast with a ceremonial mass in Delano. Presidential candidate Robert Kennedy was in attendance. At the mass, Chavez was too weak to give a speech, so he gave his written words to Reverend James Drake to share with those in attendance. He wrote, "We are gathered here today not so much to observe the end of the fast, but because we are a family bound together in common struggle for justice. We are a union family celebrating our unity and the nonviolent nature of our movement. The fast has had different meanings for different people. Some of you may still wonder about its meaning and importance. It was not intended as a pressure against any growers. For that reason, we have suspended negotiations and arbitration proceedings and relaxed the militant picketing and boycotting of the strike during this period. I undertook the fast because my heart was filled with grief and pain for the suffering of the farm workers. The fast was first for me and then for all of us in this union. It was a fast for nonviolence and a call for sacrifice." Chavez engaged in two more long fasts during his life as an activist. He fasted in 1972 for 24 days. And in 1988, at the age of 61, he fasted for 36 days to highlight the harmful effects of pesticides on farm workers and their children. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It all comes back down to the money. It's the money. You know, and the lack of transparency is the biggest part of all this. You know, I've been saying for years, the right has done a masterful job of creating all of these wonderfully named, euphemistically named think tanks, you know, Americans for Dogs and Puppies, and, you know, and moms who love apple pie, who do all of this political work. And there's a ton of cash that goes flowing through those, the dark money stuff that and then ends up, you know, fueling up the whole political arm of, you know, of mostly the Republican Party. The Democrats have some, a little bit, but not nearly the kind of coordinated messaging and networking that comes out on the right. It's just not there. The right wing money has built the most impressive infrastructure that you could imagine, a propaganda machine second to none. Really, I mean, you know, it takes from the national level and filters down to the state level, then filters down to the county level, then filters down to the municipal level with incredible accuracy. And it's amazing, you know, what they've been able to accomplish. And you have to give credit where credit is due. You really do. And not only do they come up with bad ideas, they message these bad ideas where, oh, this sounds reasonable. You know, like tax cuts for the very wealthy. We'll give the very wealthy everything that they could want. Give the boss everything. Give them all the power. Deregulate. Get rid of those labor laws. tax cuts out the wazoo, and something, you know, the benevolence, the good-hearted nature of these folks will trickle down on us. And, you know, we knew that was BS when they were trying to sell it to us, and we've seen over the last 40, 50 years, it's lived out to be the total bunk that we knew it was going to be. But they keep selling it. They keep pushing it. You know, Biden had the audacity to say we need to raise taxes on rich people. And wow, poor people went crazy. How dare you tax rich people? It's, I guess, like a form of Stockholm syndrome.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.